What Leo Frank represents. Quote, "No longer shall your name be called Jacob. Rather, Israel shall be your name. For you have struggled with the divine and with men, and you have prevailed." End quote. Genesis 32, 28 through 29. Quote, "What happened to Mary Fagan was terrible. What happened to Leo Frank was even more terrible." End quote. Harry Golden, "A Little Girl is Dead," 1965. Mary Fagan's murder solved. On August 25, 1913, B'nai B'rith president and factory superintendent Leo Max Frank was convicted of the murder of Mary Fagan in a trial that, by all objective standards up to that time, was one of the fairest ever accorded a citizen in the United States of America. A century later, a full and impartial re-examination of the evidence will still lead fair-minded analysts to these inescapable conclusions. That on April 26, 1913, Leo Max Frank did in fact murder 13-year-old Mary Fagan. That Leo Max Frank attempted to elude prosecution by implicating two innocent black men for the murder he himself committed. That Leo Max Frank was a racist who built his legal defense using overtly racist arguments and deceptions. That Leo Max Frank's legal team and supporters committed a series of unethical and illegal acts that included bribery, perjury, the planting of and tampering with evidence, even attempted murder, and the obstruction and subversion of justice at every level of the case. That, quote, "anti-Semitism," end quote, played no part in the trial or appeals of Leo Max Frank, and was invented by pro-Frank propagandists long after the trial for political purposes. There was no exodus of Jews from Atlanta, nor was there ever violence against them or their property as a result of the Frank affair. Author Steve Oney's claim that the Leo Frank affair was, quote, "America's worst case of anti-Semitism," end quote, has no basis in reality. Jewish scholar Dr. Albert S. Lindemann is clear. Quote, "The available evidence puts into question the assertion that anti-Semitism, whether as a product of a self-perpetuating fantasy divorced from reality, or as a reflection of tensions in the real world, was of decisive importance in the Frank case." End quote. For Jews had, for a century and a half, intimately participated in the political, business, and social affairs of Georgia without any hint, trace, or suggestion of, quote, "anti-Semitic," end quote, bias. Throughout the South, they had been judges, jurors, court officers, lawyers, prosecutors, mayors, councilmen, and held every other position of influence in Southern society. Harry Golden, himself a Southerner and a scholar of the Frank case, wrote that the Jew is really in an enviable position. Quote, "He is our Jew to small-town Southerners, and they often take care of him with a zeal and devotion, otherwise bestowed only on the Confederate monument in the square." End quote. There is no legitimate reason to suggest that the Texas-born, Brooklyn-reared German-Jewish Leo Frank, a man whose family proudly carried Confederate credentials, was viewed any differently from his white Southern neighbors. The one man who invested the most money, time, and resources to clear Leo Frank of his murder conviction, Jewish businessman Albert Lasker, was asked very directly in an interview in 1937. Quote, "Were you convinced of his innocence? Are you convinced of it now?" End quote. Lasker's answer is alarming. Quote, "No. At no point was I convinced of his innocence, because in the circumstantial evidence case, that is impossible, unless you were with the man every second. There was no way of our telling whether any man was guilty or innocent, of course." End quote. After he and colleagues met the prisoner, Lasker made this admission. Quote, "It was very hard for us to be fair to him. He impressed us as a sexual pervert. Now, he may not have been, or rather a homosexual or something like that. Of course, I am telling you this off the record. end quote. His interviewer, Boyden Sparks, summarized their meeting. Quote, after talking to the convicted murderer, Leo M. Frank, end quote, who, quote, talks them deaf, dumb, and blind, all the men take a violent dislike to him. Mr. Lasker says he hopes that if freed, he will fall and break his neck, end quote. All the investigative bodies involved in the case, most notably an attorney and two private detective agencies hired by Frank himself, publicly affirmed the guilt of their own client. There is no basis, therefore, on which to demand from the general public a higher assessment of Leo Max Frank than that held by his most zealous defenders. The significance of Leo Frank to the Jewish people. Quite dramatically, the Leo Frank affair has become the very essence and full expression of the Black-Jewish relationship, crystallized in a moment in time. The involvement of Black witnesses in such a high-profile trial, where their citizenship was legally acknowledged, made it a potential bellwether of American race relations. The impressive and unshaken testimonies of Newt Lee and James Conley, the two men that Leo Frank and his backers attempted to implicate in the murder of Mary Fagan, showed the attentive white public that Blacks had a degree of humanity they had been loath to concede. The granting of this American civil right to Blacks was considered by Jewish leadership and rank-and-file Jews to be an infringement on their civil rights. Scholar Leonard Dinnerstein acknowledges this point when he wrote that anti-Semitism in Atlanta, quote, was evident in the widespread acceptance of Negro Jim Conley's testimony, end quote. What's more, some Jews insisted that the circumstances that led to Frank's trial, conviction, and lynching were driven not by the overwhelming evidence against Frank, but by some larger force. Some argue that Frank, as factory manager, was resented as, quote, a symbol of alien industrialism, end quote. Others theorize that Atlantans saw Conley as someone who, quote, belonged, end quote, to them, testifying against an outsider. Still, others say that Georgians doggedly pursued Leo Frank, not because they thought he was guilty, but because the conviction and hanging of a Black man would not have been adequate recompense for the tragic loss of their virginal white Southern belle. A wealthy Northern Jew was a more even trade-off, their theory goes, for the crime that enraged the entire white South. As Lenora E. Burson crudely phrased it, the crime, quote, demanded a villain blacker than any Negro could ever aspire to be, end quote. Many other treatments amount to variations on those major themes, but all evade the true significance of the episode. And all these theories only complicate a simple reality. If whites had intended to, quote, send the Jews a message, end quote, they would have reveled in the opportunity to treat the B'nai B'rith president exactly like a nigger. And Frank would have received no court proceeding. That is, none of the 13 judicial hearings that he actually did receive. And he would have been shot and castrated, his fingers, toes, and testicles displayed in a jar on the counter of a city five and dime, if he were not first burned alive at the stake. Jews have turned Leo Frank into a powerful emblem of a much-touted Jewish-American victimhood, even though their extraordinary American success story is almost totally devoid of any instances of injustice. Up to the murder of Leo Frank in 1915, the most significant example of American, quote, anti-Semitism, end quote, was an episode that occurred 38 years earlier in 1877. A powerful Jewish banker named Joseph Seligman was denied accommodations at an elite vacation resort hotel in upstate New York. The insult was considered so egregious that the New York Times referred to it as the, quote, sensation at Saratoga, end quote. And Brandeis University professor Jonathan Sarna called the affair, quote, shocking, end quote. At the very same time, Jewish-owned hotels across America, without hesitation or a sense of irony, refused admission to Blacks as a matter of policy, and on the basis of skin color alone. A snubbing of a Jewish millionaire at a ritzy Northern hotel. Seligman quickly found other local accommodations, and the hotel faced an international backlash. seemed a trivial inconvenience compared with the lynchings, massacres, pogroms, and wide assortment of discriminations that blacks, Indians, Asians, and Latinos considered, quote, shocking, end quote. Even Leonard Dinnerstein had to admit that American Jews prior to the Frank case, quote, had experienced no organized persecution and had found unlimited economic opportunities, end quote. In fact, Jews were so well received and prodigiously successful that some referred to the American slavery-based South as their, quote, New Jerusalem, end quote, a veritable promised land. Dr. Sarna affirms that if the United States, quote, has not been utter heaven for Jews, it has been as far from hell as Jews in the diaspora have ever known, end quote. Nevertheless, that unprecedented social, political, and economic freedom unloosed a troubling predatory trait that has haunted the Jewish image. Jewish Americans were deeply involved in the African slave trade, the plantation system of the South, and the Jim Crow system of apartheid that followed. Indeed, much of Sarna's, quote, utter heaven, end quote, can be attributed to the massive profits generated by Jewish merchants in places and industries that were utter hell for black Africans, the indigenous peoples, and the many who fell victim to the most savage system of slavery and genocide in the annals of human history. Jewish wealth utterly exploded as a direct result of their trade in human beings and their marketing of slave-based produce, such as sugar, tobacco, and especially cotton. This horrific racial history presented the Jewish people with an unsolvable dilemma. It irreconcilably conflicted with the unambiguous description of the children of Israel, found in Genesis 15, 13 through 14, as the despised and rejected strangers, persecuted for 400 years in a land that is not theirs. After centuries of claiming victim status everywhere on earth, Jews had not been humbled by their travails, but instead had become the cruelest of pharaohs in their, quote, new world, end quote. By the time of the Civil War, the image of the, quote, poor persecuted Jews, end quote, had been so distorted by extensive Jewish slave trading that one of their wealthiest was denounced by a Gentile on the floor of the U.S. Senate as an, quote, Israelite with the principles of an Egyptian, end quote. The role biblically outlined for them as the children of Israel had become unrecognizable in every American sense. Leo Frank's unfortunate felony in 1913 offered a chance to refashion a tragic murder into a Jewish persecution narrative that fit the biblical model, one that the Jewish people could and would adopt as the symbol most representative of their American experience. The incident was big enough, and the subject, a B'nai B'rith leader, important enough to be used to give the Jewish people an American resume of, quote, anti-Semitism, end quote, which at the time of the Leo Frank affair was non-existent. In America, Jews had no natural enemies, and Leo Frank's martyrdom, real or imagined, provided the unique opportunity for Jews to create an imaginary but convenient oppressor. In their ritualistic retelling of the Leo Frank episode, Jews are careful not to emphasize that their victimhood is at the hands of the white Gentile, with whom they have always partnered in wielding American racial power. That relationship is still too economically profitable and politically precious to disturb. Instead, this Leo Frank-style American-Jewish martyrdom comes at the hands of the, quote, cunning, bestial Negro, end quote, James Jim Conley, who has maligned not just a single Jewish pencil factory manager, but the entire Jewish people. And this makes the Jew, as the oppressed victim of the lowest of the lowliest race, the utmost American victim. The Leo Frank saga enables the Jews to publicly reiterate their victimhood by venting their rage at, quote, black anti-Semites, end quote, with no adverse racial consequences from their white Gentile brethren. Whites are not blamed in any more than an oblique, inferential way, and in fact they are sometimes cast, as in Alfred Uhry's play, Parade, and Ben Loderman's PBS docudrama, The People vs. Leo Frank, as co-victims of Conley's voodoo-like wiles. According to Frank's devotees, quote, he was a Jewish martyr, made to pay the penalty for a crime committed by an African-American man, end quote. In this construction, the white men who actually, quote, made Frank pay, end quote, who arrested, indicted, tried, convicted, sentenced, imprisoned, and hanged Leo Frank, escape Jewish antipathy, in place of the vulnerable black man, whose race for 400 years has paid dearly for Jewish survival and Jewish success. For a full century, the malicious hoax of, quote, black anti-Semitism, end quote, has been the defining characteristic of the so-called black-Jewish relationship. Honest and legitimate criticism of Jewish behavior inimical to black interests has been reinterpreted by Jews as, quote, anti-Semitism, end quote. Not because it is that, but because the criticism is more easily repressed if it is characterized as part of a long history of bigotry and prejudice, quote, against the Jews, end quote. Blacks, who have sojourned in a land not theirs, in servitude to white Gentiles and Jews, who cruelly afflicted them for 400 years, are the only people that fit every condition outlined in the well-known biblical prophecy. Yet it is the truth-telling blacks, like Jim Conley, who have been cast as persecutors of the innocent Jews. Black truth-tellers seeking to uplift their people, such as Booker T. Washington, Marcus M. Garvey, W.E.B. Du Bois, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, have all been scapegoated as, quote, anti-Semites, end quote, and cast as ignorant Jim Conleys seeking to oppress the easily victimized Jews. Thus, quote, black anti-Semitism, end quote, was invented and deployed in 1913 as the Jews' weapon of choice to control and frustrate black political and economic progress and thereby maintain the Jews' profitable and central role in the infrastructure of American white supremacy. In Leo Frank's name, Jews reclaim the biblical, quote, high ground, end quote, which they have used to counter and even bury the explicit role they have played in the murderous 400-year history of white Western expansion. And in Frank's name, they have eluded their monumental culpability for white supremacy's profoundly negative effects on the black and indigenous communities the world over. Further, Jews have used the Leo Frank legend to recast themselves as innocent victims of a violent American racism, indistinguishable from that faced by blacks. And in so doing, the Jewish people have in one fell swoop expropriated the identity of the black man and woman, and synchronize the Jew's image with the familiar biblical narrative. Just as the younger brother, Jacob, grabbed the heel of his older brother, Esau, thus stealing his identity and birthright, so too have the Jews in America falsely claimed to be co-sufferers with blacks, using the legend of Leo Frank as their proof of a, quote, shared, end quote, history of oppression and persecution. A measure of Leo Frank's century-long potency as rhetorical armor for American Jews is the Anti-Defamation League's 2015 announcement of a major national initiative to combat anti-Semitism. The newly appointed national director, Jonathan Greenblatt, chose August 17th, the 100th anniversary of Frank's lynching, for its launch date, with Greenblatt invoking Frank's name multiple times. A few months later, in 2016, his just-retired predecessor, Abraham Foxman, announced the plan for a new, quote, Center for the Study of Antisemitism, end quote, citing a single American example, Leo Frank. Without question, the case is the most used and abused bludgeon for promoting the illegitimate concept of Jewish-American victimhood. The Jews' alleged, quote, fear, end quote, of becoming victims of violent anti-Semitism, quote, like Leo Frank, end quote, disguises the inherent hypocrisy of their stance and obscures their true role as America's wealthiest and most successful power brokers. A Jewish American Messiah. To American Jews, belief in the innocence of Leo Frank is an article of faith, one that artfully and adeptly links a prodigal people to the Israelite ancients. The problem Jews now face is that Leo Frank was no Rosa Parks. Born in 1913, the year of Mary Fagan's death, the mother of the civil rights movement, whose personal background, grace, and dignity made her ideal to carry a movement for justice on her shoulders. Jews were literally sold Leo Frank as a Jewish American Messiah before they fully grasped his questionable character, his seedy motives, and his true identity as the murderer of Mary Fagan. The greatest advertising mind in America, Albert Lasker, skillfully canonized a justly convicted murderer as the modern ancient of days. So impressive was Lasker's biblical rebranding that Frank himself participated in the grand messianic delusion. When Georgia's former governor, Joseph M. Brown, professed his belief in Frank's guilt, the convict complained, quote, "What a spectacle! An ex-governor joining, with unreserved approval, the mob who cry, 'Crucify! Crucify!'" End quote. As the chorus of people calling for Frank's conviction grew, Frank drew a direct comparison for his Bible Belt neighbors. Quote, "I feel toward them like the great Nazarene, who said, 'Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do.'" End quote. Leo Wise, son of the founder of Reform Judaism, was the editor of the American Israelite, the voice of American Judaism. He fed Frank's messianic complex. Quote, "Judge Roan, in listening to its clamor, and even yielding to it, has the appearance of being governed by the same motives as are ascribed in the Gospels to Pontius Pilate, in another trial held about 1,900 years ago." End quote. Governor John Slayton, too, was caught up in the passion of Leo Frank, as he described his reasons for sparing the convict's life. Quote, 2,000 years ago, another governor, Pontius Pilate, washed his hands of a case and turned a Jew over to a mob. For 2,000 years, that governor's name has been accursed. If today another Jew were lying in his grave because I had failed to do my duty, I would all through life find his blood on my hands and would consider myself an assassin through cowardice." End quote. And such an image worked just as planned. Jeffrey Melnick perceptively points out that only after Frank's lynching could the term, quote, "Jew," end quote, be used, quote, "to designate one who suffers," end quote. According to historian Jason Shulman, quote, "Before a serious Zionist movement developed to bring them together, and before the era of a unified response to the Holocaust, German and Russian Jews were united in their reaction to the Frank affair. Simultaneously, as the Frank affair forced Jews inward, it also garnered them outward acceptance in the American milieu. Put simply, the Frank affair was an opportune moment for Americanization. It may be time to consider that in the 1910s, anti-Semitism in the South may actually have helped Jews as an ethnic people in America." End quote. For that reason, Shulman quite accurately considers the Frank case to be, quote, "a turning point in Jewish American history," end quote. Thus, Leo Frank is an indispensable pillar of American Jewish identity, in no less of a way than the Holocaust would later become to world Jewry. So successfully was this fraudulent 1915 narrative implanted in the American mind that a century later, an unsuspecting public has almost no knowledge of the Jewish presence in America prior to that time. On that blank slate was written a new and unrecognizable history of Jewish America, one that portrayed the Jewish people as defenders of the weak and the poor, and as champions of racial justice and political equality. And just like that, Leo Frank's new and enhanced resume has him giving birth to the Anti-Defamation League as the country's most outspoken opponent of anti-Semitism. And it makes him the father of the civil rights movement and the from-the-grave leader of the fight against lynching. Blacks, who pioneered and led both those movements, were replaced, in effect, by the saga of Leo Frank. In the Christian world, time itself started over with the birth of Jesus in Bethlehem, and the world followed suit, marking its historical timeline by his life and resurrection. Significantly, the Frank affair enabled American Jews to begin their history with the plight of the man Lasker and Ox had christened a Jewish American Messiah. The history that came before the Leo Frank affair was buried, and a new Jewish identity for a modern era was born. Blacks were the most deceived by this ruse. Before Leo Frank, Jews were the black man's open enemy. After Leo Frank, Jews were the black man's best friend. Be with us again next time when we present the next chapter of The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 3. The Leo Frank Case, The Lynching of a Guilty Man. Prepared by the Historical Research Department of the Nation of Islam, Chicago, Illinois. Copyright 2016 by Latimer Associates. All rights reserved. Published in audiobook form by the American Mercury with permission of the Historical Research Department of the Nation of Islam.